It's time for Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.
Honey, welcome back to Compassion Radio and Chasing the Word.
Second episode in 2022. It's so good to be at this table again to talk about the new thing God's doing. And we're in the chapter 13 of John, at the back half of that chapter. Last week, we talked a lot about the amazing thing that Jesus did by completely flipping the script and putting himself in the role of servant in a way they had not expected. It's one thing to say you should be selfless in what you do. It's another thing to pick up the towel, the wash basin, and start scrubbing mud off people's feet. Mm-hmm. And Jesus did literally that, because the law required that the men be washed, and there was no one there to do it but him. Mm-hmm. And he made the point that when it's necessary, when it's needed, just do it. Just pick up the basin, pick up the towel, and start. You don't have to like it. You don't even have to be good at it, but you have to be willing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the big message from last week. Yeah. Let's jump into this part of the chapter, and Jesus starts talking about what it all meant.
We're going to pick up in verse 21 of chapter 13 in the book of John. At the end of our reading last week, Jesus explains to his disciples why he's washing their feet. Mm. He's telling them that a slave is not greater than his master, and the one who sent is not greater than the one who sent him. And he talks about someone that's going to rise up against him, set their heel against me. The Dynamic Gospel translation said, kick him in the teeth, which I thought was very graphic. But nonetheless, yeah. I know that that was kind of what was happening here. So Jesus tells them all of this. And then we pick up in verse 21, right after he says this. And when Jesus had said this, he was troubled in his spirit, and he testified to them, I assure you, one of you will betray me. Well, at this, the disciples started looking at one another, uncertain which one he was speaking about. One of his disciples, the one Jesus loved, was reclining close beside Jesus. Simon Peter motioned to him to find out who it was he was talking about. So he leaned back against Jesus and asked him, Lord, who is it? Jesus replied, he's the one I give this piece of bread to after I have dipped it. When he had dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas, Simon Iscariot's son. After Judas ate the piece of bread, Satan entered him. Therefore, Jesus told him, what you're doing, do quickly. Well, none of those reclining at the table knew why he told him this. And since Judas kept the money bag, some thought that Jesus was telling him, go and buy what we need for the festival, or that he should give something to the poor. After receiving the piece of bread, he went out immediately, and it was nighttime. When he had gone out, Jesus said, now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. Children, I am with you a little while longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, where I am going, you cannot come. So now I tell you, I give you a new command. Love one another. Just as I have loved you, you must also love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Lord, Simon Peter said to him, where are you going? Jesus answered, where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow later. Lord, Peter asked, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Jesus replied, will you lay down your life for me? I assure you, a rooster will not crow until you have denied me three times. I gotta say, I really don't like the way this chapter ends. It is so down. It is just so heart-wrenching when you read these words that Jesus said to Peter.
You know, when you hear somebody say something that is so troubling like that, and it's the only memory you have of them, it's almost unbearable. Mm. At least the author of this book and the people in this room right now, in this scene, have the hindsight of the experience of great trauma and incredible resurrection to offset all of it. Mm. So when they're looking back on this, it's more than healed. It is glorious. So when they recall him using the word glorify, glorify, glorify through this whole thing, these are active verbs of saying God himself is bouncing around the glory. Mm. And they're not ashamed to remember that word being used in that sense, because in the next few hours, that word is going to seem like a total heresy compared to what's going on.
Yeah.
There's nothing glorious about this. The whole world is crashing down. It's only from the other side of the cross we can look at that with hope while it's being said. You know, I've had experiences where people have said very hopeless things. My heart dies when I hear them stop there and not speak hope afterwards. But it's real, and it doesn't mean we should shy away from it. Mm-hmm. He also was saying children love each other. That to me is a really big thing, because the first time they're going to have a chance to exercise that love he's talking about is when they are all in deep grief. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not something to say when you feel good, when all things are going right, but something bad happens to somebody else or they need your assistance, then go to them in your joy and love mm-hmm. them. He's saying you're going to need this for the next 10 hours. By the time the crow speaks in the morning, you'll have messed up badly. And by the time the next rooster crows on that following morning, I'll be dead. He knows all of this stuff. Yeah. This is not going to be a pleasant time for any of them. But in that chapter, in that ugly hour, he's telling them, your first opportunity to obey me is going to be to love each other. Mm-hmm. You will need each other. Do not forsake each other. Don't run off. Don't run away.
Well, and as many of us know, the best way that we can bear grief mm-hmm. is to know that someone is there with us in it and loving us. And one of the greatest gifts that we can give another person in their grief is just to be with them, just to love them
yeah.
and sit with them and hold space for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe Jesus is giving them that command in some ways to love each other through this. We hear so many stories sometimes of families that are just torn apart by grief. Mm-hmm. They lose a family member that was the glue, basically, yeah. and the family is ripped apart because of that. We've seen that. We've personally experienced yeah. some of that. When Jesus is saying, love each other, he's saying, don't let that happen. Don't let the grief that is coming, even though they don't know it, don't let it tear you apart.
Or swallow you whole.
Yeah.
And for those who feel like it is swallowing them whole, be the bridge. Mm-hmm. Be there with them in that. Mm-hmm. Look back on the history of America and the world the past 2 years, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of families that have been visited by death. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of thousands and millions more who are grieving through the struggle of recovery from COVID because they have a loved one that just is not getting better the way they hoped. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of misery in the world just from that one thing, but it's not the only kind of misery out there. The misery that Jesus is talking about here is one that he knows he can't spare them from because right. this is so human. Mm-hmm. He's not going to remove them from the pain that's coming. He just says not. But he also knows that he's still got to do it. Mm-hmm. He's still got to go this place they can't follow yet.
Well, it says to me that Jesus doesn't always remove us from the pain. Mm. In fact, most of the time, we're not removed from the pain. We have to go through and bear the pain because if we don't, then we don't experience real life. We don't experience the reality that so many around us live through. If we're not willing to walk through those times of grief, if we insulate ourselves mm-hmm. from those things, we cannot be the kind of people that Jesus is calling us to be in these verses right here.
We can't even be his in some ways. I mean, think Judas ran out to fix the problem. In his mind, he's going to force Jesus to finally take over mm-hmm. by flushing out the troops and chasing them down so that his power can finally be shown and put those awful people down and establish his kingdom and send them all to hell. Mm-hmm. That's what his hope is. That wasn't Jesus's hope. Yeah. In fact, he knows what he's about to do. He's going to make all things new. In fact, this pain, the moment of suffering, is where he makes it all new. He doesn't make it new when he comes back in resurrected glory. Mm. He is making all things new by his suffering. And so in some ways, I think our willingness to go into suffering or to endure it and to be gracious in it or to sit with somebody through their suffering and take the load on ourselves to bear the burden with them, that makes something new happen. Mm-hmm. Something that those who suffer may not have ever thought was possible, that someone could be that close to you and can lift the burden some. When that happens for somebody, it's new. Mm-hmm. And it's not what they were expecting. Probably the best witness we can have in a time of suffering, like we have with the COVID happening around us in this world, is to be with them in their suffering and not forsake them. Not cast stones, not argue about why they got the disease, not worry about ourselves so much, but be prepared for the fact that their suffering will become ours if we're willing to let it be. And that may be the very thing that God calls us to so that we can serve him best.
I know that this is not a broadcast about grief. That's not our primary focus here, but it's such a part of this chapter.
Yes, it is.
Because it's preparing the disciples for what's ahead and the grief that they're going to have to bear. I read a quote today about grief, and it said, "Grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage." not a place to stay. It's not a sign of weakness nor lack of faith. It is the price of love. And one of the things I have been learning about grief through the past few years that we've walked this road after losing my mom and the transitions that we've been in is that grief has often felt like an unwelcome companion. It is a constant companion that walks with us through our life, but it's also a gentle teacher and a friend. Because if we allow grief to teach us, then we become more gentle with others who experience grief. I know Paul talks about, I become all things to all people so that I can serve them in the ways they need me to serve them. Basically, I know that's a paraphrase, but those are the things that God is using to tenderize us and to bring us to a place of sitting with others in their time of need.
You've kind of, as they say, anthropomorphized something here, honey. You said that grief is a companion, like a person is. Grief, when it's genuine, is not an attack. It's not the thing that is tormenting you. Grief is your way of responding to the thing that torments you, which is the unexpected, the unacceptable, the unimaginable. When you're faced with that, you don't bow to it. You grieve your way out.
Yeah.
This is actually a defensive weapon for somebody who's faced with the unreconcilable loss. They grieve, and when they grieve correctly, they literally take the power out of the thing that is tormenting them. Because that's the thing we can take back to God. We can say, all I can do is cry this out. All I can do is shout at the ceiling. All I can do is whatever. But when we do those things and we tell God that, we're taking the steam out of our own volcano, but we're also lifting up a burnt offering, and God accepts those.
Yeah. I like looking at the scriptures this way, that Jesus is preparing them for that grief. And I have to say again, like I did last week, I had not read John chapter 13 in that light before.
For 78 years now, we've depended on the faithful encouragement of friends just like you to bring this unique radio and media ministry to the air each day. You can drop us a line, ask a question, submit a prayer request, or download a free Bible study guide in just the same way. It all happens at CompassionRadio.com. This dynamic gospel is available to you in a handy paperback edition, and I'd love to send you one when you send your gift and ask for it. Remember, this is a 100% listener-supported ministry. If you've never supported us before, would you consider doing so this month? I know many of you can and want to give more, so I'll not be shy in asking for that support. Thank you for seriously considering this request and challenge. Our toll-free order line is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. If you need to call early or late, that's okay. Just make sure to leave your name and phone number, and we'll get back to you immediately when the doors open each business day. You can also give anytime online at CompassionRadio.com. And if you prefer to put a stamp on it, you can always find us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. God bless you as you stretch your faith. I hope we can be a real encouragement and challenge to you for many, many years to come. And make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today.
Why don't you read from The Dynamic Gospel now?
As we have mentioned before, this edition of The Gospel of John is our gift to you for your support of Compassion Radio. Happy to send it to you. Just let us know you'd like one when you contact us. And, of course, all of our Bible studies that go along with these chapters are available on our website, chapter by chapter. That edition's there for you, too, for free. If you'd like to get a copy of that Bible study, please download that anytime from our Compassion Radio podcast section. Here goes chapter 13, verse 21. Jesus had finished this crucial sermon and sank into great emotional anguish. "Oh, it's come to this," Jesus said. "Our group is about to be torn apart by betrayal from right here in this room." The students looked around frantically, fearing for themselves and perplexed whom it might be. No one knew what to say. The student closest to Jesus, the one known as best friend, leaned in to support Jesus in his sorrowful state, but he was just as emotional. Simon Peter caught his eye briefly and mouthed to him, "Ask who it is." So this disciple did. "Lord, who is it?" Jesus sighed and said quietly, "Just watch who gets this." Jesus took a piece of bread and dipped it in the vinegar. He looked up squarely at Judas and handed it to him. Judas took the symbol of guilt and ate it. A satanic spirit took over the man, contorting his face. Jesus said urgently, "Get on with it," and quickly. The rest of the group couldn't make heads or tails of that statement. They were supposed to be locked in for the night. Some assume that because Judas had the cash box, Jesus has sent him on some last-minute shopping errand, which seemed odd. Others thought he was off to distribute some alms to the poor. Judas jumped up and stormed out into the night. Once Judas had left, Jesus said clearly, "Now is the time for the Son of Man to be lifted up, and all will see how great God is because of it. They will see his glory with their own eyes, and God will return the honor, exalting him all the way to the heights of heaven, and all this will happen without delay. Oh, my dear ones, my time here among you is so short. I know you'll desperately search for me, hoping to follow, but as I told the religious leaders, where I'm going, you cannot go right now." It's difficult to hear that, but it's the truth. But one thing before I go, a command. Do this and keep at it. Love each other with the same passion you see me love you. Mm. What you see me do, do for each other. Do that and the world won't be able to tell us apart. If you love each other unyieldingly, the mantle will have rightfully passed to you. Simon Peter spoke up. "Lord, what place could you possibly be going that we could not follow? We go with you everywhere." Jesus replied, "Peter, try and shut up for a moment and really listen. I'm going away, really away. And it's not your time. Someday you will follow, but not now." Peter continued to argue. "What do you mean? Why can't I? You think we're not brave enough? Lord, I'm not afraid to die for you." Jesus cocked his head and sighed. "Peter, really? Would you lay down your life without a second thought? Here's the truth of the matter. In the short span of time before the rooster welcomes the sunrise, you'll have already renounced me 3 times.
Honey, I want to go back and talk about Judas a little bit and the betrayal. I did a little bit of research about this, and I wondered where Judas would have had to be sitting to have received the bread from him. Because in the tradition, they don't reach across each other in this. Apparently that's...
to your left or to your right.
Yeah, either to your left or right. Traditionally, it would seem that Judas would have been sitting at Jesus' left, which was a place of honor.
Mm-hmm. Or directly across the table.
He could have been. But the commentaries that I read said that he most likely was sitting right next to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And having been placed in that spot of honor. Now, we don't know if he scrambled for it or if the seating chart put him there or what, but
maybe they rotated and this was his day to be there.
Perhaps, I don't know, but I just felt like that is significant.
Yeah,
that
is.
Jesus would have had Judas sitting right next to him in this very solemn occasion, knowing what was coming.
Go back to the beginning of the chapter then. If he's right there, he may have been the very first one or the very last one to have his feet washed.
Mm-hmm.
Serving the one that's going to betray you would be the first thing that Jesus would do.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that.
Yeah.
And think of that guilt, the guilt of him on his own soul. You wash off ceremonially to be clean, and you collect the sin, so to speak, from their feet, and you move on. Is there something about Judas and his sin that is tainting? I think by the time we're all around the table, some theologians might try to make that argument, but Jesus did not, because he's saying you're all clean now, except for one. But again, it comes down to something that's not really about the feet, is it? It's not about the ceremony. It's not about the symbology. It's about the heart. It always has been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find it interesting that Jesus, again, is stirring the waters here, getting the disciples, who is it? Who is it? Is it me? Is it you? Is it him? You know, and Simon Peter again sends little John, ask him what's going on here. See if he'll tell you who it is. And Jesus does tell them. He literally tells John who will betray him. And they still don't get it, which, you know, 2,000 years removed, I find strange.
Well, if you think about the scene, there's still a big table with a lot of rambunctious guys kicking back, having this meal together. And they're only like partway through the ceremony of this Passover supper. But it's a whole evening. You're going to spend the entire night together locked down as you celebrate the Passover. These guys are very familiar with each other. They have a lot of inside jokes. My guess is this is not the only sound in the room.
Right.
You know, so Jesus is talking to John right next to him, practically in a whisper between them. And it's only the eye contact between Peter and John that's communicating. But there's got to be a lot of other conversation going on. This is a busy restaurant kind of idea.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff happening. As simple as it is, I'm thinking this is real life. You know, this ceremony they're celebrating together, this memory that they're trying to renew by participating in it, is something that is common. It's important because of where it falls in the history of Jesus and what's about to happen. It's the most important Passover ever, in my mind. And yet, it's something that everyone just expected to be part of. This is what you do. If you're a Jew, you remember these things. You thank God that he saved you from the Egyptians and gave you a future and a hope. And you're here today because your forefathers were rescued from Egypt.
Right.
It's remembering something, but it's something that's very familiar to them. Jesus is about to make all of this very unfamiliar to them and set in motion things that will become very familiar to us across the centuries, but it was brand new. Mm-hmm. So this is real life. Jesus is preparing them for real things that are really going to happen. They're not just philosophies anymore. In fact, there is no theology, there is no doctrine, there is no philosophy without walking the path with him.
Yeah.
That's the only kind of faith that matters to him. You know, James talks about that, his younger brother, in the years to come. Faith without works is dead. Mm-hmm. If you don't live this thing out, it's not really faith, it's an idea. Mm-hmm. So faith has never just been about what you think. It's about what your thinking does to your actions, the choices you make, the places you go, the things you truly believe and are willing to die for. Mm-hmm. Not kill for, but to die for. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, I've got to stand up for and defend what I believe. And they're willing to throw punches at people for their beliefs about a thing. When Jesus said, that's not me. Yeah. That's not faith in me.
Yeah.
You're going to hurt somebody else in my name. That's not me.
Right.
So the thing you think is right is absolutely wrong. And that's where I think Jesus keeps turning over the tables in our lives over the centuries, reminding us that what he did, the way he did it, is the real gospel. And we have to be willing to go there with him, or it's never going to become real for us.
Well, I think we'll talk about that a little more further down in the line in the book of John, and how Jesus is consistently calling them to peace, calling them to care for others.
Be healers and peacemakers.
Yeah. So that is a good point. Yes, we are to be aware of our calling and who we are in Christ and what our privileges in the kingdom are, but it stops at the kingdom door.
Yeah.
And I think we get that backwards. We get that mixed up.
We want to have all the privileges of being in the kingdom while we're out in the world, and we don't want to hold up our responsibilities within the kingdom when we're in it. So we do tend to get things a bit backwards. And so we need to get reminded from time to time that to be in the kingdom is to be a servant of the Most High, and that if he's willing to bow the knee and wash the feet of those who even will betray him, then we need to be willing to follow that example literally and go to those places and serve those who may never, ever be grateful, ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Mother Teresa is probably a great example of that. Maybe 99% of the people she ministered to with all of her Sisters of Charity and Mercy that she had in Calcutta received gratitude from those that they served. Maybe not 100%, but there's always going to be some people that will remain bitter to the moment they die.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they deserve the same kind of love and service as anybody else does, because God put them there in front of you.
Yeah.
And they did that. They treated everybody, no matter what their attitude was, no matter how resentful they were at their station in life, or how grateful they were at the love they received, made no difference to them. They were going to serve because they knew that they were literally touching the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I want to be reminded of that going to 2022, that this year, no matter what happens, ought to be about us really washing feet. Helping them to know they're okay, that they can stand before God without shame in his presence, because God has made them clean. And we were part of the process of helping them to understand how much God loves them and has prepared them to come before him.
Mm.
And to be thrilled at that opportunity and not to feel like it's just another chore or some religious thing we've got to go through. It is the thing that is great, that is joyful, that brings meaning, is to serve others.
Mm.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Compassion Radio's Chasing the Word. We're back with our next program this following week, and we'll start in chapter 14 of the book of John.
Save your son, Holy One, slain so I can live. See the land, the great. Takes away my sin. Oh, the
This dynamic gospel is available to you in a handy paperback edition, and I'd love to send you one when you send your gift and ask for it. You can drop us a line, ask a question, submit a prayer request, or download a free Bible study guide in just the same way. It all happens at CompassionRadio.com. Make sure to ask for your own copy of The Dynamic Gospel when you contact us today. Remember, none of this is possible without you. If you believe hearing the good news from the front lines of faith builds your faith, then let us know today. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or make your gift through our website, CompassionRadio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today.